In the 80s, 90s, there was a point where everyone was saying, well, you can't spend that much money on just TV ads and Super Bowl ads and blimps and billboards in Manhattan. They went towards direct response, things that have attribution. So you spend on an ad, the person comes through the ad and buys, and you're like, boom, it's easy to scale, it's easy to justify, easy to walk into a boardroom and tell them why you need $1 million more. Now it's gone away from both of those, and it's somewhere in between where it's do the top of funnel, but don't just let it go, no attribution. Do the top of funnel and find a way to use the AI and all these intent signals that we have and track back to what you can scale at that top of funnel. The more you get towards that top, the harder it is to see. But as you get to the bottom, you could definitely say how big you can make the top of the funnel and how wide you could actually spray.
If you haven't yet used Motion, the creative analytics platform used by top e-com and D2C brands like Fiori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more to ship winning ads, here's why you should try it out. Everyone knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That's how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative? You're going to need your media buyers and your creative teams on the same page. Right now, you're probably spending hours tiring away going back and forth between Google Sheets and your ad platforms and tools, and then spending even more time plugging it all into different decks for the rest of your team. In a perfect world, you could have an elegant way to combine visual assets and performance data so media buyers can save time and creative teams can get the details they need to make great ads all in one place. And that's where Motion comes in. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts. You can monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. No need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You'll finally have media buyers and creative teams working together to create and scale your next big winner. If you're ready to learn how the best D2C and e-commerce brands use Motion to ship winning Meta, TikTok, and YouTube ads, book a demo today or start a free trial at motionapp.com/DTC. Even better, Motion offers a monthly subscription plan so you can dodge those annoying annual contracts. Get 50% off your first month when you use the link motionapp.com/DTC on signup. Okay, you ready to roll?
Let's do it.
Rick, welcome back to the D2C podcast. I was just looking, it's almost like a full calendar year since you last showed up to talk about the mega growth that you're helping architect over there at 4SIG. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, lots have changed in both the environment, like macro marketing, but also at 4SIGmatic, some shifts and some advancements. So all good, man. All really good.
How's the year been like just in terms of growth? Have you grown as much as you anticipated, or have you been like a lot of brands and you've had to kind of take a step back?
Frankly, I think we're either at or near our fastest growth pace ever. It's in different realms that I think we would have predicted when we were on last time a year before that, right? So like leading into that that time frame, I don't know that I would have picked the spots that we found scale and leverage, but we have found it and we've been consistently finding it and picking up pace. So still working, right? There's always going to be building. There's always going to be getting more initiatives in place and redoing programs and taking a step back and burning down ad systems and rebuilding them. But we're in a really good spot and finding more and more wins stacking up onto each other.
Let's talk about it. So what have been some of the bigger points of leverage over the past year for this growth?
Yeah. So take a step back to the side here. Most of the people I've talked to that are in what we do and in this growth marketing advertising space have found bumps, but also tailwinds on Meta, right? So it's once in a while you're like, we're crushing, and you hear the brands that are doing really well. And then you hear the brands that are like, we literally cannot do anything. And like, we're at a complete standstill and we're going back to our board and investors reshifting and whatnot. So we've seen some of that too. And don't get me wrong, it's not like all things are good. We've had tons of issues with Meta, and every time we find a little win, it just finds a glass ceiling and we're right up against it. So where we have found success is Amazon, but more broadly shifting away from the storytelling that Meta does. And we've done really well at commercialized product level sales, right? So putting a premium product, premium price in front of someone, not really discounting super heavily and being kind of the top tier of price in the space, and just being real good and real sneaky at query-based in-market shopping, competitor conquesting, going hard in those spaces and taking market share from either less premium products or products that don't have, like, so we have mushrooms for those of you that don't know, and the mushrooms inside of this coffee help make better benefits, and, you know, it amplifies it and gives you that next edge to where it's what coffee used to feel like, or what you, that like chasing the dragon, right, in the back of your head. So it's real nice to go in front of like a Folgers audience or a Maxwell House and be like, are you tired of drinking the sawdust yet? Like, do you want to come over to this side? And you put something in front of them that's frankly triple the price, but they come, they buy it, and super high new to brand rates, like in almost unbelievable new to brand rates on Amazon right now, and super high repurchase rates. So
how are you doing that? How are you getting in front of a sawdust audience with a product that's three times more and educating them in a platform that you don't have full control over? Like, how is that working?
It's frankly a bit of, it's more audience than storytelling. It's less about the creative and more about getting people that already had a bug in their ear that they should be trying something different, and just being in front of those audiences, being in front of the audience that has regularly bought Maxwell House, but has been looking at all the other premium brands, right? So that person, they're perfect. Like, and there's tons of them, tons and tons and tons. And as Amazon has grown more into this extremely mainstream way to buy things for demographic across the board, it's pretty easy to find those. And the targeting on Amazon is absolutely bananas, right? It's just crazy what you could do. And it's what you used to be able to do on Meta. We all got spoiled with like really accurate direct response. And the last real spot for that right now, Amazon, they own the black box. So you could play in it fully, right? You can't take things out. You can't go emailing that audience with custom emails and trying to pull more storylines. But within their sandbox, you could do a lot, and you can find whoever you want.
You can find those people that are getting sick of coffee in a way, the people that have had the bug in the ear, people that are kind of mid-funnel on the whole concept of mushrooms.
You could actually find intent, right? Like, go try to find intent on Meta right now. It's impossible. You got to find in-market, high-intent audiences. Crazy, right? So you could do that on Amazon, and we've found ways to not only get in front of them, but push them over to, then you're going, you know, more premium polished, and you're worrying less about the mushrooms and the storyline. You're just showing that there's more here, right? And the memory structure you want them to take away from that is like, this is better, more than we're using lion's mane with fruiting bodies and whatnot. It's, there's more here than what you are doing, and you should try this one because of, you know, the 100 million cups that we've sold and all the reviews that we have that are 5 stars, and it tastes great, which isn't very common in the mushroom world right now. So We've got those competitive advantages, and just make sure that they're known and put in front of the consumer. And it's, you don't really have to warm them up too much. They're warm. They're ready.
You mentioned, every time I hear a new term in marketing, I write it down in my big book of marketing terms, memory structures. So talk about memory structures and how you think about the four sigmatic funnel in terms of memory structures.
No, dude, this is a big one, right? So in my mind, and we go back 2 years now, almost 2.5 years now too, like when the iOS saga was taking place and direct response was starting to get holes shot in it, and marketers that had found all this scale and momentum were really having to go back to the drawing board. So what's happened between then and now is we've gone back to like old school Mad Men marketing, right? And you're looking at how to get these snippets in time out to your consumer and have them carry something about the brand. Like, what is brand awareness? People are like, top of funnel. We're using UGC at top of funnel. Like, not really, right? You're using top of funnel Meta, but real top of funnel happens way higher up the funnel, way higher up. And what you can do there is literally just insert something into someone's mind that you're hoping they carry forward. And if you could build what we're calling memory structures, right? So you're putting in, let's say it's a lifestyle video. It's like forest, foraging, premium shot, beautiful, luxury. And you want them to carry one of those words, right? And then you could do it again, and you're stacking the next memory structure on top of it. So by the time they get to the product offer, you know exactly what you've stacked and then what the gaps are for that end piece. It's like, well, now you got to go social proof. You got to go organic or some quality or flavor, and you're going down to the nitty gritty of reasons not to buy and just trying to X them out. But in the top layer, you want them to be walking into that offer already with the memory structures that they need to understand what you're all about. Even if they don't even know your name, they don't know your logo, they don't know your product, they got the sense because they kind of like absorb some things over time.
And not in a really prescriptive way, it sounds like, in a more poetic or sort of semantic way, right? Because it's like you're sort of incepting deeper ideas at that real top of funnel that they might not even realize. Like, you're not going, here are the ingredients, here are this, here's its benefits. No. It's more this, like, you want to live a life like this. You want to be in tune with nature, right? Like this.
Exactly.
Get off the bean.
Right. Like, put more of the ethos of the brand, why we exist, right? Try to get our why into someone's brain and then show them the what. If you start selling the what right now, they don't understand why we ever put mushrooms in coffee. Like, why would you ever do that? Coffee was fine. Right. So then you got to start with the, why are we here? Why are we even doing this? Like, what caused us to be this mushroom coffee manufacturer, mushroom coffee and friends manufacturer? And starting there just creates a lot more purpose, makes it easily understood, and drives a sense of community at the very end, right? Because then they're now bought in before they even knew what you're selling, because they were saying, this looks, that looks like a great board. I want to take a walk. Or the nature aspect really resonates with me. And you're now starting to connect with the audience that is core demographic should be connecting with these things with you if you have good product market fit and brand fit. So then by the time you get to the product, you're then showing your target market exactly something they need that's inside of this realm to make that lifestyle happen, right? Instead of selling the product and then telling them what the lifestyle that comes with it is.
It's like, this is the key that fits into the lock that you've already presented in a way.
Right. But first you got to show them that there's a hallway with a door at the end.
Yeah. This is super cool. It's really timely too. I've been having this revelation just a little bit about the funnel structure, you know, with Pilot House being, you know, primarily a, you know, or maybe its focal point has been Meta. We're obviously big in Amazon and Google and all that as well. But when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and it's easy to think of the full funnel as something you do on Meta ads. But more and more, you know, clients we're working with, we're talking about like true top of funnel efforts and how they may be more difficult to measure at times. But it's like, I feel like 2024 is the year that brands that are doing well take bigger stabs at true top of funnel. What else are you guys doing? What's working best in this true top of funnel spot that you mentioned?
Yeah, we're pushing into DV360, world of streaming, OTT, Prime Video ads now has placements against their high-end shows. That's awesome, right? Not great for the end consumer, but it's, I think it's $3 to get out of it, but awesome for us because you can go into a DSP portal. You don't have to go to Upfronts in New York City and buy these big packages anymore. And that's part of the yo-yo, right? So this yo-yo that happened, I think, before I was born, because I'm younger than maybe my gray hair looks, but you know, in the 80s, 90s, there was kind of a point where everyone was saying, well, you can't spend that much money on just TV ads and Super Bowl ads and blimps and billboards in Manhattan. And they went towards, slowly shifted towards direct response, things that have attribution, things that you could see and feel the response from. So you spend on an ad, the person comes through the ad and buys, and you're like, boom, it's easy to scale. It's easy to justify, easy to walk into a boardroom and tell them why you need $1 million more. So now where we're at now is gone away from both of those. And it's somewhere in between where it's do the top of funnel, but don't just let it go. No attribution, do the top of funnel and find a way to use the AI and all these different intent signals that we have and click funnel data to track back to what you can scale at that top of funnel, the impact it's making, and then how to shift it. Right. And obviously like a funnel, the more you get towards that top, the harder it is to see. But as you get to the bottom, you could definitely say how big you can make the top of the funnel and how wide you could actually spray. You don't want to go too much and start saying like, yeah, let's go TV and just blast out. Start with geographic regions and start to push through and see the trends and see how they're reacting and check your organic search and try to find any little string to hold onto. Like, what's the thread that I could start to yank that's correlated between the spend at top of funnel and the revenue or whatever you're tracking at the bottom, whether it's signups or revenue or email, like app downloads.
And post-purchase surveys are a part of that process as well, right? I find that there's a lot of things that kind of come back and that TV has a bit of a delay factor when it comes to seeing the results in things like that. Are you finding that as well?
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with maybe a hot take on surveys as a whole. I mean, there is a very certain demographic that takes surveys. and you're going to be biased against that. There is a demographic that the people that inside of that demographic, the people that take surveys, they generally are on social media more. Like you go to anyone's post-purchase survey, and like we were taking post-purchase surveys when we weren't really even on Meta at the time. And people were like, where'd you find us? And it's like Instagram. I'm like, probably not, right? But like, I'll give you that. So then there's this like some sort of bias, and I can't really think about which one it is, but one of the biases, right? Like someone sees it at the top of the survey and they're going to click it because it's like maybe one of the five that they saw. So then you find this skew towards whatever. And for years we were on the big podcast, Rogan, Huberman, Tim Ferriss, and a lot of people found us, truly found us through that. But then we weren't giving enough credit to those channels as a whole, but we also were spending too much of those channels when we went broad. So again, this is like that yo-yo of like, you got to find the happy medium because all that stuff's good and it's helping, but like how much do you really want to trust the survey that's going to say like, all right, 70% of the people that have taken this survey have clicked this button. It's like, can you put another one at the top for the next month? And you change it and it's like, numbers have changed. And it's like, well, that's not good, right? That's a little scary. So that's where like, and this could be its own podcast of my hot takes on surveys, but you get where I'm going, I think.
I keep thinking of the metaphor of that plane where it shows where the plane's been hit. And it, so everyone's like, oh, I have to reinforce the plane in this exact spot. But what it doesn't actually mean that. This is not a great metaphor, but I know what you mean. You don't know what you don't know. And that's like, we're finding the same thing when we're surveying our readers. We're surveying all the people who love our newsletter and are going to fill out a big long survey for us, but we're not getting the people who've maybe stopped reading the newsletter or who would never click on a survey link to begin, which is really where a lot of that valuable right. audience is, you know?
Right. And incentives have become a lot less valuable for surveys. So years ago, giving a $5, $10 Amazon gift card was absolute jet fuel for a survey. These days, you almost see those emails every day in your inbox. So they don't mean as much. They're not as exciting. The people that are taking them have taken 10, right? And they're like, I take every single one. And you talk to another friend, they go, I've never taken a single one. And that's yeah. the demographic that you're splitting it up, and you're now not touching the people that don't take surveys, or you're just placating the ones that do. If you're basing all of your decisions off it, and it, you know, asterisks, it deserves a home somewhere, and it's a great tool to get a read. But and there's a lot of marketers that rely quite heavily on it.
You rifled off a bunch of the stuff you're doing on TV, and I'm super curious, A, like what is working best within that TV world for your brand, or really is it like you just find the best pockets of each kind, which is what it kind of sounds like. And then also I'm just curious like what your budget split looks like when it comes to these two these true top of market efforts versus more direct response channels.
Yeah. So I would say as we stand now, kind of hard to think about this as a percentage because it's on the P&L, it's Amazon and DC, so they're split up. So you take them and combine them, and it's a little more difficult to say. And if you were to combine them, the percentage of top of funnel, true top of funnel, we're talking OTT streaming, whatnot, would be much smaller because of how much we're spending on the query based to like sponsored product, sponsored brand, sponsored display on Amazon. But when you're looking at our DTC, call the DTC engine the storytelling engine, right? So if you say the storytelling engine spends 15% at this true brand awareness, memory structure build level, the rest of it kind of falls in from there. And that could be OTT, that could be some podcast, that could be newsletters, that can be anything that's going out with the explicit purpose of going to reach an audience for the very first time and let them know we exist and why. I would say it's about 15% right now. We are fortunate that we have a lot of good content, so we could spin up the actual content that goes into these videos in-house and, you know, free with our employees, and specifically one of the founding team, Finnish guys, really talented. So we've got that to our advantage. Want to scale it up, right? Or will scale it up, I should say. Need to now, it's a longer cash conversion cycle at the top of the funnel. So you got to really slowly build. The shorter the cash conversion cycle, the faster you can scale. The longer the cash conversion cycle, the slower you have to scale, right? So if it takes 180 days to start to see search really start to push behind it. And search takes 30 days to recognize in a conversion. Well, it's like, well, you got a hell of a runway there. So you can't spend too much at the top of funnel knowing that that's going to help a maturation period, right? So you got to really slowly tick on the dollars there and stop, make sure you don't have an impact lag happening somewhere and like stop, keep the spend really steady, measure, and then go back to the math equation and say, like, how much more can we put there from the correlated effect that we're seeing down funnel? Whether that's like branded search on Google has actually gone from, all things stable, has gone from a 3 ROAS to a 4 ROAS. It's like, okay, that probably has to do with the fact that we're telling people about it at this top funnel. So then what's that 1 ROAS that, what are those, what's that scale worth, right? And like, if we were to take that and now push more into that branded and try to say, like, can we get that with triple the spend? Right. And where does that go? Does that go back down to a 3? Because then all of a sudden you could push a lot more of the top and scale in both of those areas because they're now lockstep and there's a correlated effect that you could drive.
And just back to Amazon, it sounds like you guys are being a lot more aggressive. A lot of brands or smaller brands, they're more set it and forget it with Amazon. They think of it as this sort of more passive distribution channel where people will discover you. But it sounds like, are you spending more on Amazon ads than you anticipated with this strategy? Or were you always like, I want to just like corral intent there like crazy?
More than anticipated? Oh, yeah. I mean, God, yeah. Like an eye-watering amount that we go out and spend extremely efficiently. At times, it feels like there is no top-level scale. And this isn't just like attributed ROAS. I'm talking true day-to-day revenue and subscribe and save revenue just growing at a blistering pace, to where you're finding more efficiency, the more dollars, you know, we've spent 10% more month over month for the past 6 months, but revenue has grown 25% month over. And you're like, what? Like just bananas numbers, right? So yeah. And I think, you know, hopefully this podcast hasn't gotten too big, Eric, but I feel like there's not a lot of people competing with us there right now. And we're getting that advantage, right? So we're pushing hard into the realm that a lot of people say, like, be where the customers are just to be there, rather than, hey, there's something here where we can go like on a, more of a seek and destroy mission and go try to find some market share that would be considered undiscovered revenue if you were to go, you know, step back and not take a look at it.
I love it. And you're still working with Pilot House on the Amazon side as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
so you got Clifford on the case.
My favorite pirate, Clifford. Yep.
Nice. Oh, that's great. No, I love to hear it. I just think, yeah, I think there is a big opportunity for brands to think of it as a less passive channel. And I'd love to do a deep dive sometime on how you guys are doing it. That's really, really cool. You also mentioned Mushroom Coffee and friends. Who are the friends? What are you planning with this friend group?
Yeah. So we have a pretty wide catalog, right? And really, if you look at like more of the mission statement of Four Sigmatic without getting too brand termy and boilerplatey, we are taking mushrooms and inserting them into products that we feel are the best mediums to consume mushrooms because they taste good. So it's not actually just coffee. Coffee is really our inroad because just the very best way we've found. But inside of that, we've got instant coffee, K-cups, pods as a whole, whole bean for espresso and fresh ground coffee. And then we have products like lattes, coffee lattes that have a powdered milk substitute. We've got creamers that go into coffee, so you could use your same coffee and still consume the mushrooms. Got elixirs, which are like kind of our superpower, the most mushrooms possible in a little packet, more like a tea, like a powdered tea. Got protein powder, delicious, really creamy, like unbelievable that it actually has mushrooms in it because it tastes really good. And when I look at our catalog, I kind of consider it coffee, protein, and friends of coffee and protein. It's like, here's your big core pillars. And then all the other products kind of like support or are cross compatible with those audiences. But at the end of the day, we're making, you know, we've got capsules now. We're coming out with teas, like true teas. So we're pushing more against what are the best ways that people can consume these mushrooms rather than just like coffee, 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 coffee.
Yeah. I was just thinking about it, and it's like, it's got this dual pronged effect because A, you're getting these mushrooms into more people's lives, which are going to, enhance their lives in various ways. And you're also, in some cases, you're taking coffee out, which for a lot of people, like I'm a total coffee addict, but it's like, you know, 3 or 4 a day. But you're also like, you'd be reducing a little bit of that anxiety that coffee kind of produces. So it's this really like double pronged positive effect you guys are having on the world, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's someone, I think we probably hired them, but they said it's almost like an ordained mission that Taro had set out to do, because it was truly him thinking, these mushrooms that I'm drinking in a tea, they taste terrible, but they are so beneficial. Like I've found I've got better focus. I've got, you know, I could run a marathon for the first time. He's like, and it's not coincidence. So then he went out and set out to find ways to put them into products where they wouldn't taste terrible, and that you could break through to more of a mainstream audience that's really not going to put up with something that truly tastes like mushroom water. Like it's kind of ridiculous to drink every morning.
Yeah. So I think the only other way you could make the world better is if you moved into the magical realm. But I guess for a company that has such broad commercial appeal, that is that's always going to be a challenge to do that, to introduce that into your family and friends. What are you guys thinking?
So it's a topic that gets tossed around a lot, and I'm not going to be super definitive, but it would be hard, right? It would be real hard because we've spent a lot of money, a lot of time trying to tell people that these actually, you're not actually microdosing when you wake up, and you can drink before work, and you're not going to be like tripping and be staring at a Zoom and be like, oh my God, my boss is an elephant right now. And like, what am I doing on this crazy coffee? So we've worked so hard to push the divide there that were psilocybin to become legal, it would be a big topic, right? And it's a whole big can of worms at the end of the day, because it's both a massive opportunity, but it's also a massive risk on all the products that no one would ever want to take if they actually contained a drug that had hallucinogenic properties. So you'd have to really dance that line really thin, or completely split off and have another arm this is the arm. But it would be, from a marketing standpoint, be extremely difficult. And then you talk about the whole like restricted advertising and whatnot, like that CBD and cannabis providers have right now. It's extremely hard to do traditional advertising over there. So do we really want to open that up for ourselves? It's a topic. I don't think it's a topic.
It's a can of worms.
Yeah, it's a can of worms.
What I love about the product of 4-Sigmatic is that it's like, because there's so many supplements out there, and there's so many things that you can take to enhance your life that you have zero sensation when you take it. And I'm not saying, you know, 4-Sigmatic is certainly not psychedelic, but it feels different than, it feels like a cousin of coffee, but different. And it's funny, I had two packs the other day, and it compounds to not to the point where you're tripping, but it compounds to the point that you feel it more and more, which I think is probably one of the big reasons for your success as well. Because I think you have a lot of drop off when you try a product that you feel nothing from, which is like 90% of these better for you products, right? Do you think that's a big part of the success?
Yeah, it definitely shows in the repurchase rate. It's not snake oil, right? For the first time in a while, you get a product that you like, it's got that id, right? You drink it right after you feel something, like, and you have a really good baseline or benchmark, because most of us drink coffee every day or multiple times a day. So then you try one different, you're like, okay, like I could say with pretty good confidence that this is different than XYZ. And then, you know, you try the hot chocolate. Like I dare you to put 5 of those packets in some milk at the end of the night and you drink like a bunch of them, dude, it puts you out. It's like a tranquilizer dart. Like I'm telling you, like you can't fake that, right? Like I'm high energy and whatnot. I take some, I'm like, oh my God, like there are things happening here. And the same thing with like focus blends and our capsules. You take a bunch of them, you're dialed in, man. You are absolutely dialed in, and it's not a placebo.
No.
It works.
Mycelium is special.
To me. We don't use mycelium, by the way.
That's right.
Fruiting bodies.
What's the difference?
This is hot, hot topic right now. You know, it's all over the place. Mycelium is the roots that create a fruiting body. And mycelium are everywhere, right? So they're kind of in the ground and whatnot. The fruiting body is
the market economy of the whole world is the mycelium, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's like,
well, it connects the trees, and they do nutrient transfers,
right?
And it's the mycelium network is way bigger than we could ever imagine. They talk. Right. That's
right. So the issue here is a lot, I won't say every, but good chunk of the products that are saying they're using mushrooms are using these roots. And okay, the mycelium, you could say they contain a bunch of benefits, and they do. But what the issue is that they grow in grain. So then you're taking that grain and you're inevitably just putting grain inside of these products, so that when you take a sip of it, it's how much of the mushroom are you actually getting? If you're weighing, it's like 1500 milligrams of lion's mane. It's like, well, you had 1500 milligrams of myceliated oats or grain, and how much of that was grain? And then you, like, you go down and you're like, well, it's really not that much. And maybe that's why you didn't feel anything. With ours, it's the actual, like, the fruiting body, the element of the mushroom that's truly a mushroom, what you think about when it's a mushroom. And most people aren't using it because it's extremely expensive. But for what we're doing, you know, in our eyes and our missions, it's fighting the good fight and not taking sacrifice on quality. And it speaks in the repurchase rate. It speaks in the quality. It speaks in the fact that you could feel it when you take a cup of coffee in your hand and you finish it and it feels good. It feels clean. It feels, you know, you feel healthy. You don't feel that with all these other products.
And I don't know why, but fruiting bodies is just such a great phrase. I need to hear that more in my regular daily life.
Dude, it's so easy to get caught down, like, in the rabbit hole of your own marketing. And you're like, well, we should be talking about how we don't use myceliated oats and we're grown on logs. And it's like, well, hold on. We should probably address why you'd want mushrooms in your coffee first, right? And it's,
A little confused that people, like, don't want a 2-inch drill bit. They want a 2-inch drill hole. They don't really always care about the where and whens and wheres of how you get there. They want the result.
Exactly. It's like going to a steakhouse and they're talking more about the salt than the steak itself. And it's like, this salt that we harvested from the Himalayan mountains and it was carried here on little llama back. And you're like, okay, that's cool. And they're like, and also we put a steak under. And you're like, well, hold on. There's a steak involved. Like, let's talk. It's easy to lose track of it because there's all these little details, these cool little snippets that truly are interesting, but it's easy to get lost in the sauce.
Have you guys ever run anything on Reddit? Have you ever had any? This is just a left field question. It's something we're working on in the newsletter right now. Reddit put out a big guide about how to make ads work there, and I know it's a graveyard for a lot of performance advertisers because you go in there and if you don't have the right content strategy, Reddit users smell it right away. I'm just curious. Have you ever tried anything there?
Tried on other companies, yes. At Four Sigmatic, no. I love Reddit. I would say less than a graveyard. It's like swimming with piranhas, right? So you have to be ready and you have to be full court press and you have to be, in my eyes, the most native of any platform. If you're not being Reddit specific, you're going to get eaten alive. Like the comments, the threads that will start, the screenshots, you're just going to get picked apart to the point where you're actually doing either damage or you become a meme of yourself, right? Like it could spiral out of control. And if you're not prepared for it, and I mean prepared, like, so make me a meme, I'm now going to screenshot the thread and make that an ad. And you just keep going down the Reddit rabbit hole, be like, I'll play Reddit games with you. Like, let's go. And we haven't gotten to a point where we're ready for it, but I've got so many ideas that I want to do over there and test. That comes down to like our core systems, core processes, core stuff is locked and loaded for a few months and I've got some time and I'll definitely jump over there at some point and get a little tiger team internally together. Like we're going to go.
But it does take someone who's like a Reddit. You need to almost be native. Yeah, native to that community as well. And almost known commodity before you'd ever even advertise, right?
Oh, yeah. And you got to know how to play the games with them. You can't fight them because they are... they got nothing to lose, right? Those people, they're just ruthless over there. So you have to know how to dive deeper and really just, like I said, be native to Reddit. It's a crazy opportunity because of how much interest and passion there is on Reddit. But you just need to make sure that you're going in there understanding where those dangers lie and understanding that if you get caught in the danger, the only way out is to go deeper, right? And it's kind of this funny, it's not just an advertising platform. It could be the death of you. It's in a dramatic sense.
Yeah, I can understand that. We're just coming in on time here. I'm curious, in your current flow, is there any piece of your tech stack that you're really enamored with or something, some tool, SaaS tool that you use out there that you couldn't live without?
It's a good question. So I am both edges of the coin here, where on one side, I've worked hard to trim things down to just the biggest names in the game and the easiest to plug and play into. And then on the other side, we are beta partners for like AI, everything, right? And I've got friends that are starting these different programs. One, Marathon, looks at your P&L and then gives you contribution margin per campaign that you're running, both from top of funnel, brand awareness, all the way down to conversion. So it's different than attribution. It's actually looking at it from a commoditization standpoint and an actual profit and loss contribution margin profile per funnel. And that stuff is cool, right? And that is really bridging the gap, like I was saying before, like between Mad Men and AI, right? Like how do we come right in between? These are guys that started Chubbies and went to Solo Stove. Super smart marketers are now on this, like, let's build a tool to help people do what we thought was these illuminating moments. And it's cool, man. Like that's the stuff that it's not really fully fleshed out yet, but as it's coming together, it's like, how have I not lived with it? Like, how have I not had this as a marketer for so long? Because a lot of this has been like back of napkin, whiteboard, spreadsheet kind of like I'm going to trust my heart more than a number here and just keep pushing. But now you finally got something where you can lock and load and say like, this funnel is making us more money, so let's push here. Or on the top side, it's like, no, you could actually push that OTT streaming ad way harder because of all the stuff that's happening downstream. And these are the tools that I think we're starting to see pop up now in the industry that are just mind blowing. But to be frank, most of the stuff that comes out is kind of a distraction, right? So on the other side, it's like, do you really need all that predictive index modeling right now if you don't know how to use it and take it to the front end and have someone see the difference? It's like, cool, you could tell me exactly who's going to buy. Like, so now what? Now what do you do with it? And we're almost there.
And they become a lot more valuable at your scale, I imagine, too, with the amount of sort channels that you have going, but also a potentially bigger distraction, I guess, as well.
Yeah, no, you could get a team that's completely down a rabbit hole and they're all excited about it, so then it's real hard and you're like, how do I get my growth team off of this product that they're just addicted to, but it's really not helping us grow at all, right? So that's the pitfall of new shiny object syndrome. It is cool, don't get me wrong. And like if we weren't here to make money, I'd be looking at a lot more. But most of the time, the things that make the biggest difference are the least sexy, right? It's like back-end keywords and meta objects and really unflattering things that you got to get your hands dirty with. And those are the ones that make you really tick up or that you see most momentum coming from. It's not really the cool AI little tool. Like, when's the last time a company plugged in a tool and actually got to $100 million from it? Like, doesn't really happen, right? No. Like, it doesn't really happen. It's never going to be your unlock. You were doing something else that helped. It's generally not the unlock you need to go into the next step.
No. Agreed. Rick, thank you for coming on the D2C podcast. This is our annual checkup. We will, I think we were talking skiing before this, so I'm going to keep you on my list for when we launch our Whistler Mastermind, if we ever get some snow.
Dude.
And then otherwise, man, it's always great connecting.
Yeah, man. I'll see you next year if I don't see you before the Whistler trip, but pleasure. Thanks for having me, man. See you soon.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.